Chapter 11. Erected an annual ground rent and beavers must be paid, and all the farmers must do the same, which they call obtaining the right to trade. Where is there an inhabitant under the jurisdiction of the company, of whom anything was asked or exacted for trade or land? All the farms are conveyed in fee, subject to the clause barum of nog t beerman, taxes imposed or to be imposed. One Hendrik Jansen the tailor was throughout Keith's administration one of his bitterest and most abusive opponents, and was several times prosecuted for slander. In 1647 he sailed on the Princess with Keith and was lost. Laurens Cornelissen van der Wel was a sea captain, and also prosecuted by Keith. The English minister Francis Doughty has never been in the service of the company, wherefore it was not indebted to him. But his English congregation are bound to pay him, as may be proven in New Netherland. The company has advanced the said minister, from time to time, goods and necessaries of life amounting to about 1,100 guilders, as the colony book can show, which he has not yet paid, and he is making complaints now, so that he may avoid paying it. Whether or not the director has desired a compromise with Doughty, I do not know. Director Stuyvesant, when he came to New Netherland, endeavored according to his orders to stop in a proper manner the contraband trade in guns, powder and lead. The people of the colony of Rensselaerwyck understanding this, sent a letter and petition to the director, requesting moderation, especially as they said, if that trade were entirely abolished all the Christians in the colony would run great danger of being murdered, as may more at large be seen by the contents of their petition. The director and council taking the request into consideration, and looking further into the consequences, resolved that guns and powder, to a limited extent, be sparingly furnished by the factor at Fort Orange, on account of the company, taking good care that no supply should be carried by the boats navigating the river, until in pursuance of a further order. It is here to be observed that the director, fearing one of two evils, and in order to keep the colony out of danger, has permitted some arms to be furnished at the fort. Nobody can prove that the director has sold or permitted to be sold anything contraband for his own private benefit. That the director has permitted some guns to be seized has happened, because they brought with them no license pursuant to the order of the company, and they would under such pretenses be able to bring many guns. The director has paid for every one that was seized 16 guilders, although they do not cost in this country more than 8 or 9 guilders. It is true that a case of guns was brought over by Vastrick, by order of Director Stuyvesant, in which there were 30 guns, which the director, with the knowledge of the vice director and fiscal, permitted to be landed in the full light of day, which guns were delivered to Commissary Kaiser with orders to sell them to the Netherlanders who had no arms, in order that in time they might defend themselves, which Kaiser has done, and it will appear by his accounts where these guns are. If there were any more guns in the ship it was unknown to the director. The fiscal, whose business it was, should have seen to it, and inspected the ship, and these accusers should have shown that the fiscal had neglected to make the search as it ought to have been done. Jacob Rienson and Jacob Schermerhorn are Scotch merchants, peddlers, born in Waterland, one of whom, Jacob Schermerhorn, was at Fort Orange, the other, Jacob Rienges, was at Fort Amsterdam, who there bought powder, lead and guns, and sent them up to Schermerhorn, who traded them to the Indians. It so happened that the company's corporal, Gerrit Berendt, having in charge such of the arms of the company as required to be repaired or cleaned, sold to the before-named Jacob Rienges guns, locks, gun barrels, etc., as can be proven by Jacob Rienges' own confession, by letters written to his partner long before this came to light, and by the accusations of the corporal. The corporal, seduced by the solicitation of Jacob Rienges, sold him the arms as often as desired, though the latter knew that the guns and gun barrels belonged to the company, and not to the corporal. There was confiscated also a parcel of peltries, as may be seen in the accounts, coming chiefly from the contraband goods, as appears from the letters, and as the said Jacob Rienges has been in this country since the confiscation, he would have made complaint, if he had not been guilty, especially as he was sufficiently urged to do so by the enemies of the company, and of the director, but his own letters were witnesses against him. Just the backer, being accused also by the above-named corporal of having bought gun locks and gun barrels from him, and the first information having proved correct, his house was searched according to law, in which was found a gun of the company which he had procured from the corporal. He was therefore taken into custody until he gave security to answer for the claim of the fiscal. As the English of New England protected among them all fugitives who came to them from the Manhattans without the passport required by the usage of the country, whether persons in the service of the company or freemen, and took them into their service, it was therefore sought by commissioners to induce the English to restore the fugitives according to an agreement previously made with Governors Eaton and Hopkins, but as Governor Eaton failed to send back the runaways, although earnestly solicited to do so, the director and council, according to a previous resolution, issued a proclamation that all persons who should come from the province of New Haven, all the others excepted, to New Netherland should be protected, which was a retaliatory measure. As the governor permitted some of the fugitives to come back to us, the director and council annulled the order, and since then matters have gone on peaceably, the dispute about the boundaries remaining the same as before. Less than one Theophilus Eaton, governor of New Haven 1639-1658, and Edward Hopkins, governor of Connecticut seven times in the period 1640-1654. The recriminations and retaliations alluded to took place in the winter of 1647-1648. 2 months before the date of this answer, Stuyvesant had arranged with the commissioners of the United Colonies at Hartford a provisional agreement as to boundaries between English and Dutch on Long Island and on the mainland, but the treaty was not ratified by the English and Dutch governments. Nobody's goods have been confiscated in New Netherland without great reason, and if anyone feels aggrieved about it, the director will be prepared to furnish an answer that ships or shipmasters are afraid of confiscation, and therefore do not come to New Netherland is probable, for nobody can come to New Netherland without a license. Whoever has this, and does not violate his agreement, and has properly entered his goods, need not be afraid of confiscation, but all smugglers and persons who sail with two commissions may well be. All those who were indebted to the company were warned by the director and council to pay the debts left uncollected by the late William Kieft, and as some could, and others could not well pay, no one was compelled to pay. But these debts, amounting to 30,000 guilders, make many who do not wish to pay angry and insolent, especially as the company now has nothing in that country to sell them on credit, and it seems that some seek to pay after the Brazil fashion. Less than one the recent conquest of the company's province of Brazil by the Portuguese had enabled many debtors there to avoid paying their debts. The memorialists have requested that the people should not be harassed, which however has never been the case, but they would be right glad to see that the company done nobody, not demanded their own, yet paid their creditors. It will appear by the account books of the company that the debts were not contracted during the war, but before it. The company has assisted the inhabitants, who were poor and burdened with wives and children, with clothing, houses, cattle, land, etc., and from time to time charged them in account, in hopes of their being able at some time to pay for them. If the taxes of New England, before spoken of, be compared with those of New Netherland, it will be found that those of New England are a greater burden upon that country than the taxes of New Netherland are upon our people. The wine excise of 1 stiver per can was first imposed in the year 1647. The beer excise of 3 guilders per ton was imposed by Kieft in 1644, and is paid by the tapster alone, and not the burgher. The recognition of 8 and 800 upon exported beaver skins does not come out of the inhabitants, but out of the trader, who is bound to pay it according to contract. The director has always shown that he was desirous and pleased to see a deputation from the commonalty, who should seek in the fatherland from the company as patrons, and the lord states as sovereigns, the following: population, settlement of boundaries, reduction of charges upon New Netherland tobacco and other productions, means of transporting people, permanent and solid privileges, etc., for which purpose he has always offered to lend a helping hand. But the remonstrants have pursued devious paths, and excited some of the commonalty, and by that means, obtained a clandestine and secret subscription, as is to be seen by their remonstrance, designed for no other object than to render the company their patrons, and the officers in New Netherland odious before their high mightinesses, so that the company might be deprived of the just patronatus, and be still further injured. The remonstrants say that we had relied upon the English, and by means of them sought to divert the college, as they call it, which is untrue, as appears by the propositions made to them. But it is here to be observed that the English, living under the protection of the Netherlanders, having taken the oath of allegiance, and being domiciliated and settled in New Netherland, are to be considered citizens of the country. These persons have always been opposed to them, since the English, as well as they, had a right to say something in relation to the deputation, and would not consent to all their calumnies and slanders, but look to the good of the commonalty, and of the inhabitants. It was not written on their petition, in the margin, that they might secretly go and speak to the commonalty. The intention of the director was to cause them to be called together as opportunity should offer, at which time they might speak to the commonalty publicly about the deputation. The director was not obliged, as they say, to call the commonalty immediately together. It was to be considered by him at what time each one could conveniently come from home without considerable loss, especially as some lived at a distance in the country, etc., that they have not been willing to communicate, was because all whom they now paint in such black colors would have been able to provide themselves with weapons, and make the contrary appear, and in that case could have produced something in accusation of some of them. And since the director and those connected with the administration in New Netherland are very much wronged and defamed, I desire time in order to wait for opposing documents from New Netherland, if it be necessary. As to Vanderdonk and his associates' report that the director instituted suits against some persons, the director going to the house of Michael Jansen, one of the signers of the remonstrance, was warned by the said Michael and Thomas Hall, saying, there was within it a scandalous journal of Adrian Vanderdonk, which journal the director took with him, and on account of the slanders which were contained in it against their high mightinesses and private individuals, Vanderdonk was arrested at his lodgings and proof of what he had written demanded, but he was released on the application and solicitation of others. During the administration both of Kieft and of Stuyvesant, it was by a placard published and posted, that no attestations or other public writings should be valid before a court in New Netherland, unless they were written by the secretary. This was not done in order that there should be no testimony against the director, but upon this consideration, that most of the people living in Netherland are country and seafaring men, and summon each other frequently for small matters before the court, while many of them can neither read nor write, and neither testify intelligibly nor produce written evidence, and if some do produce it, sometimes it is written by some sailor or farmer, and often wholly indistinct, and contrary to the meaning of those who had it written, or who made the statement. Consequently, the director and council could not know the truth of matters as was proper, and as justice demanded, etc. Nobody has been arrested except Van der Donk for writing the journal, and Augustin Hermans, the agent of Gabry, because he refused to exhibit the writings drawn up by the nine men, which were promised to the director, who had been for them many times like a boy. Upon the first point of redress, as they call it, the remonstrants advise that the company should abandon and transfer the country. What frivolous talk this is! The company have at their own expense conveyed cattle and many persons thither, built forts, protected many people who were poor and needy emigrating from Holland, and provided them with provisions and clothing. And now when some of them have a little more than they can eat up in a day, they wish to be released from the authority of their benefactors, and without paying if they could, a sign of gross ingratitude. Hitherto the country has been nothing but expense to the company, and now when it can provide for itself, and yield for the future some profit to the company, these people are not willing to pay the tenth which they are in duty bound to pay after the expiration of the 10 years, pursuant to the exemptions to which they are making an appeal. Upon the second point they say that provision should be made for ecclesiastical and municipal property, church services, an orphan asylum and an almshouse. If they are such philanthropists as they appear, let them lead the way in generous contributions for such laudable objects, and not complain when the directors have endeavored to make collections for the building of the church and school. What complaints would have been made if the director had undertaken to make collections for an almshouse and an orphan asylum? The service of the church will not be suspended, although Domin Johannes Bacchius has departed, who was there only 27 months. His place is supplied by a learned and godly minister who has no interpreter, when he defends the reformed religion against any minister of our neighbors, the English Brownists. One referring to Reverend Johannes Megapolensis, who had been persuaded to remain in New Netherland and assume pastoral care of Manhattan. The foregoing are the points which really require any answer. We will only add some description of the persons who have signed the remonstrance, and who are the following. Adrian van der Donk has been about 8 years in New Netherland. He went there in the service of the proprietors of the colony of Rensselaerswyck as an officer, but did not long continue such, though he lived in that colony till 1646. Arnoldus van Hardenberg accompanied A. Jansen to New Netherland in the year 1644, with a cargo for his brother. He has never, to our knowledge, suffered any loss or damage in New Netherland, but is known how to charge the commonalty well for his goods. Augustin Hermans came on board the Mecht van Enkhuizen, one being then, as he still is, the agent of Gabrie II in trading business. 1. Aid of Enkhuizen. 2. Peter Gabrie and Sons, a noted firm of Amsterdam. Jacob van Kewenhoven came to the country with his father in boyhood, was taken by Wouter van Twiller into the service of the company as an assistant, and afterwards became a tobacco planter. The company has aided him with necessaries as it is to be seen by the books, but they have been paid for. Olaf Stevenson, brother-in-law of Govert Loukmans, went out in the year 1637 in the ship Herring as a soldier in the service of the company. He was promoted by Director Kieft, and finally made commissary of the shop. He has profited in the service of the company, and endeavors to give his benefactor the world's pay, that is, to recompense good with evil. He signed under protest, saying that he was obliged to sign, which can be understood two ways, one that he was obliged to subscribe to the truth, the other that he had been constrained by force to do it. If he means the latter, it must be proven. Michael Jansen came to New Netherland as a farmer's man in the employ of the proprietors of Rensselaerswyck. He made his fortune in the colony in a few years, but not being able to agree with the officers, finally came in the year 1646, to live upon the island Manhattans. He would have come here himself, but the accounts between them, and the colony not being settled, in which the proprietors did not consider themselves indebted as he claimed, Jan Evertsen came over in his stead. Thomas Hall came to the South River in 1635, in the employ of an Englishman, named Mr. Holmes, being the same who intended to take Fort Nassau at that time, and rob us of the South River. This Thomas Hall ran away from his master, came to the Manhattans, and hired himself as a farmer's man to Jacob Van Curler. Becoming a freeman, he has made a tobacco plantation upon the land of Wouter Van Twyler, and he has been also a farm superintendent, and this W. Van Twyler knows the fellow. Thomas Hall dwells at present upon a small bowery belonging to the Honorable Company. Elbert Elbertson came to the country as a farmer's boy at about 10 or 11 years of age, in the service of Wouter Van Twyler, and has never had any property in the country. About 3 years ago he married the widow of Jarrett Wolfertson, brother of the before-mentioned Jacob Van Kewentoven, and from that time to this has been indebted to the company, and would be very glad to get rid of paying. Govert Lukemans, brother-in-law of Jacob Van Kewentoven, came to New Netherland in the yacht St. Martin in the year 1633 as a cook's mate, and was taken by Wouter Van Twyler into the service of the company, in which service he profited somewhat. He became a freeman, and finally took charge of the trading business for Gils Verbruggen, and his company in New Netherland. This Lukemans ought to show gratitude to the company, next to God, for his elevation, and not advise its removal from the country. Hendrik Kip is a tailor, and has never suffered any injury in New Netherland to our knowledge. Jan Evertsen Bout, formerly an officer of the company, came the last time in the year 1634, with the ship Eendricht Union, in the service of the Honorable Michiel Pauw, and lived in Pavonia until the year 1643, and prospered tolerably. As the Honorable Company purchased the property of the Heer Pauw, the said Jan Evertsen succeeded well in the service of the company, but as his house and barn at Pavonia were burnt down in the war, he appears to take that as a cause for complaint. It is here to be remarked that the Honorable Company, having paid 26,000 guilders for the colony of the Heer Pauw, gave to the aforesaid Jan Evertsen, gratis, long after his house was burnt, the possession of the land upon which his house and farmstead are located, and which yielded good grain. The land and a poor unfinished house, with a few cattle, Michiel Jansen has bought for 8,000 guilders. In brief, these people, to give their doings a gloss, say that they are bound by oath and compelled by conscience. But if that were the case, they would not assail their benefactors, the company and others, and endeavor to deprive them of this noble country, by advising their removal, now that it begins to be like something, and now that there is a prospect of the company getting its own again. And now that many of the inhabitants are themselves in a better condition than ever, this is evidently the cause of the ambition of many, etc., at The Hague, 29th November, 1650. End of Project Gutenberg text and Yentoven's answer. Begin Project Gutenberg text of Odgert. Letter of Johannes Odgert to Hans von de Mantel, 1655. And J. Franklin Jamison, ed. Narratives of New Netherland, 1609-1664. Original Narratives of Early American History, New York. Charles Scribner's Sons, 1909. Introduction. The chief military exploit of Director Stuyvesant was the conquest in 1655 of the Swedish settlements on the Delaware River. New Sweden had been founded in 1638 by a party of settlers under Peter Minuit, sent out by the Swedish South Company, with private help from Dutch merchants. The history of this little colony belongs to another volume of this series, but some account of its absorption in New Netherland should find a place in this. At first the Dutch and Swedes on the Delaware, the former with their Fort Nassau on the east side, the latter with their three forts, Nya Elfsburg on the east side, Christina and Maya Gothenburg, New Gothenburg, on the west, dwelt together in amity. But competition for the Indian trade was keen. Conflicting purchases of land from the Indians gave rise to disputes, and from the beginning of Stuyvesant's administration there was friction. This he greatly increased by proceeding to the South River with armed forces in 1651, and building Fort Casimir on the west side of the river, near the present site of Newcastle, and uncomfortably near to Fort Christina. In 1654 a large reinforcement to the Swedish colony came out under Johan Rising, who seized Fort Casimir. But the serious efforts to strengthen the colony, made by Sweden in the last year of Queen Christina, and the first year of King Charles X, were made too late. The Dutch West India Company ordered Director Stuyvesant, not only to retake Fort Casimir, but to expel the Swedish power from the whole river. He proceeded to organize in August, 1655, the largest military force which had yet been seen in the Atlantic colonies. The best Dutch account of what it achieved is presented in translation in the following pages. The Swedish side is told by Governor Rising in a report printed in the collections of the New York Historical Society, 2nd Series, I-443-448, and in Pennsylvania Archives, 2nd Series, V-222-229. 1. Rising's dates are given according to old style, Swedish fashion, Bodgert's according to new style, as customary in the province of Holland. Of Johannes Bodgert, author of the following letter, we know only that he was a writer, or clerk. Hans Pontemantel, to whom the letter was addressed, was a director in the Amsterdam Chamber of the West India Company, and a Schepen magistrate of Amsterdam from 1655 to 1672, in which last year he took a prominent part in bringing William III. The letter was first printed in 1858 in De Naverscher, the Dutch Notes and Queries, v. 185-186. A translation by Henry C. Murphy was published the same year in the Historical Magazine, 258-259, and this, carefully revised by the present editor, appears below. For a history of New Sweden, see Professor Gregory B. Keene's chapter in Winsor's Narrative and Critical History of America, IV. 443-488. Letter of Johannes Bodger to Hans Pontemantel, 1655, Noble and Mighty Sir. Mr. Schepen Pontemantel. This is to advise your honor of what has occurred since the 5th of September, 1655, when we sailed with our 7 ships, one composed of 2 yachts called the Holland Stoogen, Dutch Frontier, the Princess Royal, a galliot called the Hoop Hope, mounting 4 guns, the flyboat Lieft Love, mounting 4 guns, the yacht Dolphin, Vice Admiral, with 4 guns, the yacht Abrams Offer and Abraham's Offering, as Rear Admiral, mounting 4 guns, and on the 8th arrived before the Swedish fort, named Elsinore. Less than 2 this south fort had been abandoned. Our force consisted of 317 soldiers, besides a company of sailors. 3 the GENERAL apostrophe S4 company, of which Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.